We took the Ways to Edinburgh, taking advantage of the weird geography of the spirit world to cover a lot more physical distance in the material world. Only certain previously explored routes were safe and reliable, and you had to have some serious supernatural juice to open the door, so to speak, between the real world and the never-never. But if you could do it, the Ways were darned handy. The Chicago to Edinburgh trip took us about half an hour. The headquarters of the White Council of Wizards is a dull, dim, drafty sort of place, not unlike the insides of the heads of a great many people who work there. It's all underground, a network of tunnels, its walls covered in carvings of mystic runes and sigils of stylized designs and genuinely beautiful artistry. The ceilings are kind of low for me in places. Some of the tunnels are pitch black, but most of them are bathed in a kind of ambient light without a visible source, which is an awfully odd look, sort of like one of those black lights that makes certain other colors seem to glow. We passed two security checkpoints and walked for another 5 minutes before Molly shook her head. "How big is this place?" her subdued voice echoed down the empty tunnels. "Big," I said. "Almost as big as the city above, and it has multiple levels, way more than we actually use." She trailed her fingers over an elaborate carving in the stone as we passed it, a mural depicting a forest scene, its edges and lines crisp and clean, despite the smoke from occasional torches and the passage of centuries. Her fingers left little trails in the light layer of dust coating the wall. "Did the council carve it out?" "Nah," I said. "That would have been too much like work. Rumor has it that it used to be the palace of the Lord of the Dina Shi, that the original Merlin won it from him in a bet."
"Like Merlin?"
she asked. "Sword in the stone and so on?" "Same guy," I said. "Doubt he was much like in the movies."
"Wrote the laws of magic, founded the White Council, was custodian of one of the swords, and established a stronghold for the council, too," Molly said. "He must have been something else."
"He must have been a real bastard," I said. "Guys who get their names splashed all over history and folklore don't tend to be Boy Scout troop leaders."
"You're such a cynic," Molly said.
"I think cynics are playful and cute." There was no traffic at all in the main corridor, which surprised me. I mean, it was never exactly crowded, but you usually bumped into someone. I headed for Warden Country. There was a large dormitory set up for the militant branch of the White Council, where I could generally be confident of finding a surly, suspicious face. It was also very possible that Anastasia Lucio, captain of the wardens, was there. The cafeteria and the administrative offices were nearby, so it was hands down the busiest part of the stronghold. Warden Country and the cafeteria were both empty, though there was a deck of cards spread out on a table in one of the lounges. "Weird," I muttered. "All the checkpoints are business as usual, or I'd think something was wrong." Molly frowned.
"Maybe someone got into the heads of the sentries."
"Nah, they're jerks, but they're not incompetent jerks. No one around here is going to get away with mental buggery for a while."
"Buggery?"
Molly asked. "Hey, we're in the United Kingdom. When in Rome." We went across the hall to administration and finally found someone, a harried-looking woman who sat in an old switchboard, the kind with about 1 million holes and plugs that had to be manually inserted and removed to run it. She wore a pair of ancient-looking headphones and spoke into an old radio microphone.
No, we have no word at this time. When we learn something, you will be informed."
She jerked the wire out, plugged it in under another flashing light, and repeated her spiel. I watched that half a dozen times before I literally waved a hand in front of her face to get her to notice us. She stopped and blinked up at me. She was a matronly-looking woman, iron gray woven smoothly through her brown hair, which meant that she could be anywhere between 45 and 200 years old. Her eyes flicked over me and then Molly, and I saw her body tense. She eased her rolling chair a few inches back from us. Like most of the older crew of wizards, she probably regarded me as a sociopath looking for a nice bell tower. The switchboard lights blinked on and off steadily. They were the old kind that made little clicking sounds as they did.
"Ah," she said, "Wizard Dresden, I am quite busy."
"It looks like it," I said. "Wizard McPhee, right? Where is everybody?"
She blinked at me again as though I'd spoken in Ewok. Why, they're in the senior council's residence hall. It was the only place big enough for everyone who wished to witness it. I nodded pleasantly and tried to remain calm. Witness what? The ambassador, McPhee said, impatience touching her voice. She gestured at the switchboard. You haven't heard?
Was sort of busy yesterday, I said.
Heard what? Why, the Red Court, of course, she said. They've sent an ambassador plenipotentiary, she beamed. They want to change the ceasefire into a genuine peace. They've sent no less than Duchess Ariana Ortega to ask for terms.